This is Back Talk by Successful Black Parenting Magazine, the most listened to podcast for parents by parents.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for listening in to Back Talk by Successful Black Parenting Magazine, the first national magazine for parents of Black children. I'm Janice Robinson Celeste, your host and publisher of Successful Parenting Media. I want you to tell all of your friends and followers about the show. After all, sharing is caring. Know that our hashtag for the show is hashtag BackTalk. Now, if you need a job, you're going to want to listen until the end of this podcast, because today we're joined by David Lee, who calls himself the chief evangelist and visionary for the tech diversity. And we are discussing the huge overall unemployment problem in the Black community and how it is affecting families. So, hey, David, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, let me ask you, basically, give us an overview of why African-American unemployment has reached 1.4 million, the highest since 2022. Now, you're hearing these politicians, oh, yeah, unemployment levels are, they're low, and they're not high. So, William, here's a statistic, and we are feeling it. So we know it's real. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So, I mean, overall, like the bigger unemployment picture is a nuanced one, right? There's a lot of things that come into, so I won't throw a ton of like financial technical terms at your audience, but the biggest thing, anytime we have these factors, would lead to a recession, right? And, you know, a recession is a kind of a natural part of the business cycle. When that starts to constrict, right? Corporations, small businesses, everybody starts to spend less, right? Prices start to go up. Things start to cut down. Companies always cut the most expensive resource, which unfortunately is human resources, right? So they're trying to save as much as possible. Where they usually make those cuts is in the positions where they feel like they, you see like marketing or support jobs or, you know, anything that's not directly revenue generating. And so when you have that, you see these massive layoffs in that area. So where that affects the most, and why we're why Black people are most likely affected by this, is because majority of the time, those are the jobs they're in, any kind of support jobs, things around there. Also, right now, what we're seeing for the first time since the gig economy really took off is that when this starts to happen, when we start to have a recession, right, people have less money, right? And so they're not going to spend as much, right? This is, I remember when I was younger, my stepdad, who was always used to read financial papers, would talk about, you know, the Costco's of the world, and people would make Costco runs when things get tight. We got to tighten the belt. All of a sudden, we're going to Costco and buying 10 pounds of mayonnaise. I'm like, I don't know why we doing this. Like, what's going on? But it's because of the fact that you're trying to stretch every dollar. So when that happens, those areas where it's those gig or those service workers, they don't get as much, right? So when you have all of that coming together, right, coming out of you know, the pandemic, as the economy's finally starting to recover, you had a lot of things that were, the economy, although it inflated, it was a artificial inflation that we're sitting on top of, and all of that had to come back down, right? And so it's correcting itself in a very real way, to where now the jobs that are getting there are getting very, very competitive. And unfortunately, it's always been an uphill battle for, you know, Black Americans getting in certain areas. I can't speak to every area, I can speak to tech. It's always been a hard hill battle when even they were hiring like crazy. Now that they're not, everybody's kind of sitting tight in their circles. And so if we're not in those circles, it's less and less likely for us to get those jobs.
Right. And it is important for us to be in the tech circle, because they're making tech without us does not help us. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's definitely... It's something that I've spent the last, you know, 7 years of my career. So I spent my whole 20 years in tech, right? So I came out as a computer science major, started up a software program, went to North Carolina A&T, Aggie Pride. So I was a big fan already coming out of HBCUs. I saw what it did for me, being able to be around an environment where there was nothing but Black people, like positive Black people, seeing all different things, and then coming back also in the corporate world and coming away from that. But specifically in tech, the way it's moving right now is that tech has evolved in such a way that it's already consumed every part of our lives, but now we're starting to develop technology that even sit in front of like basic services, right? So where how you interact with, you know, the government or county or anything like that for identification, things of that nature, and all these things are being developed, right, without, you know, Black people kind of being in the room. And to the point, it started to get to the point where before it was like, oh, this was just a bug, we missed this. But now it's like, we're seeing things where they're using biometric authentication for case files for police. And so there was a story about 5 years ago that I did a talk on, where a young man was arrested, charged, thrown in jail because he was misidentified based on bad authentication data, right? The biometric data was off. He looked similar to somebody else, to non-melanated people, because for those of us who are melanated, we all know when it comes to taking a picture, lighting matters. If I turn these lights off right now, you take a picture, I'm gonna look a whole lot differently than if I turn those lights on, right? And so there was problems and reports of these tools being used and not identifying people of color accurately, but yet they went on. Why? Because there's nobody there to say, like, hey, this is what this means. There's everybody that's testing it looks like one color. They're the same people. So this is an area that we need to improve on. I've spent the last 7 years talking to different executives, different companies, any company that I'm in, working with either the resource groups or the DEI programs to help figure out how to get these companies talking to the pipelines of where Black people are doing things within the communities to make sure that, hey, more and more Black people are understanding of this, getting into the STEM fields, right? Getting into mathematics, engineering. These are the pipelines that lead to that. And so making sure that we're having that, because A, it's financially beneficial for us, right? But B, it's financially beneficial for everybody to make sure we're creating tech in an equitable manner.
Absolutely. And that was a critical example you gave, like misrepresentation, you know, they didn't recognize his face, facial recognition. So that means basically, you know, if we all look alike to some people, then how do you program that, right? And so even to something as simple as, I read, you know, going into a bathroom and using the sensor that turns on the water, they didn't recognize Black skin. So a lot of times when you're trying to get that sensor to work, you know, it's tech, right? So when you're trying to get that to work and it doesn't work, a lot of times it has to do with the color. So they went back to correct that, allegedly. So I still have some trouble sometimes. But, you know, that was one of the things. So that was low tech, but we're talking high tech stuff now, right? And now, yeah, how do we get more Black people working in these industries, like tech or any industry at this point? But when we have like DEI being criticized, and they're weaponized that word now, I found out through some of the posts I've seen on Facebook, that's DEI stuff. What does that mean? He's a DEI mayor. What does that mean? Like, you know, so they're so gung-ho, and I say they loosely, because I know it's not everybody. I say it very loosely, but the people that I've seen that are racist, when I say they, I literally mean racist, and I don't think everyone's racist, but the racist, when they say DEI, it's weaponized. So now all these programs, like in Florida and Alabama, and I'm seeing other states going to start to follow this, they want to get rid of affirmative action. We have Duke University just got rid of their affirmative action program, right? So all this stuff is happening as we speak. And then how do we protect, you know, and make sure that our children can get into these industries, can have a job when they grow up? Hell, their parents. Yeah. How do their parents get a job? You know, we got to feed our babies, right? So, you know, how does that work?
Yeah, so it's there was a saying that a friend of my grandmother used to say, right? Like, if you don't pay attention to the past, you are doomed to suffer the failures of your ancestors, right? So if you don't know about the fights that we've already had, like, so this DEI backlash right now, This is affirmative action 2.0 remix, because I want you, if you're listening to this, if you're watching this, go back and Google and research what, you know, the Martin Luther Kings, the Jesse Jacksons went through when we had to get affirmative action the first time, like how visceral that pushback was, right? It came through, it got passed, we had it. Was it successful? Not necessarily, but the same thing was happening, is that the intent of the whole purpose was like, we want to create an equitable ground, because right now we know you are looking at our name, you are looking at our picture, and you are making judgments and stereotypes and not letting us in the door. So what we want is a place to be able to be on equitable ground and show that we can do the job just like anybody else can do. We just want it to be equal. But what they took was like, no, you want handouts. The same thing's now happening with DEI, right? Which, ironically to me, all this pushback and people saying, oh, it's a DEI hire, they did this or whatever, and DEI means poor quality. to me, what that reveals is, no, that's your poor quality hiring decision. So what you're telling me is you wanted to check a box. So therefore you said, well, I'm going to hire this person because they look like this, and that way I can say I'm DEI. So again, you skipped the intent of what it was meant to be. You didn't want to do the hard work, which is, let me look at my culture. Let me look at what I'm doing. Let me develop a pipeline. Let me develop a standard for how I hire within this organization and make sure that the standard is, this is what I'm looking for, regardless of anything else. You didn't do that work. You want to take the easy way out. And so now you want to blame everything on DEI. And so to fight that, it's got to take more people standing up, just like our forefathers did, our ancestors did before us. And we have to say, no, that's not the intent, right? And so it means I take that to heart, because the position that I am with executives that I have and leadership positions that I have, then it's like, okay, fine. I'm going to stand up and make sure that we're talking about that. We're putting the right things to make sure that the conversation is had the right way. Right. And so that way the children, our children's children do have a chance to get in there, because if not, if we just stand by and let them attack and get rid of it, then they're going to continue to have that narrative, and then we'll never get that chance back. Right. Every generation is going to have their fight. This is ours. And so it's just about talking to it, bringing it to light, and making sure that we are addressing and talking about what it is that we're wanting. We're being clear on that. And we stand fast in that. No, we are not going to let this go. This is what this needs to be. And this is how we need to get this accomplished.
Right. You know what? I wonder about the fight, because we're tired. We're so tired. And I noticed that we are delayed a lot of times with our response. Okay. So we saw Governor DeSantis in Florida starting to cut African-American history programs, but not Asian history programs, AP yeah. programs specifically. We saw him get banning books that were mostly Black books and LGBT, all those types of books, right? So we saw that happening. Our community didn't speak up very loudly at first. At first it was the librarians, right? So now we're starting to feel it. So that's when we speak up. So are we going to be able to fight this fight when everyone's so tired and beaten down and we don't have jobs? We don't have the American dream. Even back during Martin Luther King's time, we still had houses, even though they were in our hood. We were able to afford houses. We were able to afford our car. Now people yeah. are really defaulting on things because the economy is so bad. This is truly a recession, whether they're calling it or not. What do you think? Are we up to this fight?
We have to be. It's one of those things, if I'm being really honest, it doesn't matter if we're up to it or not. Like we have to, the fight's here. Right. And I know, like, trust me, I get it. Like I was just talking to a buddy of mine yesterday. We flew out, we had to go talk to a customer. And I brought him on to the company specifically because we've been colleagues for a while. We had a good chance to work together. I said, listen, I get a chance to build this advisory group here. And it's a powerful statement to say that both leaders of the advisory program are Black. And I was like, so yes, I'm doing this for that reason. And we were talking about, it's like, I'm tired too. Like, I'm tired of having the same conversation. I'm tired of having to have to carry myself in such a way or do these things, whatever. So I get it when I hear people say that they're tired, but it's like, if we don't, there's nobody else to fight if it's not us. Right. So whether or not we're prepared for it or whether or not we're tired enough, it's here. And so we're going to have to, because if we don't, we've seen glimpses of what it's going to be like without it. And so for those right now where it's like you look at it and say, OK, but it is harder to get jobs right now. We don't have this and we're tired and we don't have the resource to fight. We're going into this generation of how we need to look at, kind of personal finance and the 9-to-5 having one job for 40 years has long been gone, right? Ooh, that okay. does not exist anymore, right? We are now in the age of, content creators and business owners. Like everybody to a certain extent has to be a business owner. Am I telling you have to go build a $1 billion business tomorrow? No. I was like, but you need to have a stream of income that you directly control, right? That is not controlled by somebody else who's managing a business that can decide, I don't need this, or that is not dependent on the generosity or kindness of others, either with tips or in service. We have to start creating streams that we now control. And we're in an age where it's very well possible. And it's a lot easier than it was before, right? Simple things as Starting, being a content creator, starting a YouTube channel, making, making candles, find a craft, something that you have that you can monetize. You have to start looking at your personal finance as you incorporate it. You are a business and you have to protect that bottom line. So then how do I add more revenue into my bottom line? If it means being a little bit uncomfortable and saying, but I might have to sell some things, right? These things are no longer luxuries for us, right? These are necessities. Because it's not going to get any better the way this economy is going and the way that we are structuring the way in which we produce value in commerce in this country. It is leaning towards that. The tax laws were always written for business owners. It's always been that way. And so there's areas that we need to get better about and learn and pick up on. I mean, if you are a small single family, like husband and wife, like start looking at different things that you guys can do together. And you also want to be showing that to your kids so they see that, right? And it's something that I think we're not saying in enough firm manner. We're trying to be nice about it. I'm just like, it's the reality, right? You need to learn investing, understand finance, learn business, because this is going to be the way to get out of this. Black people spend $1.4 trillion a year, mm-hmm. right? We are one of the most powerful sources of commerce in this country, yet we probably own 0.1% of that. We keep 1% of that. So the money is there and is flowing. As a people, we have it, we're spending it out. We need to start putting it back into the places that come into us and that benefit us.
Absolutely, I agree with that 100%. And I was just talking to my mother, who's 84 years old, and she just didn't understand, like, why would someone leave their job? I'm like, Mom, people leave their jobs every 2 years, so that's the only way you can get a raise these days, otherwise a substantial raise anyway, otherwise you don't, you know, it doesn't matter what you're getting is 3% raise. What is that? So you're absolutely right. Now I'm trying to figure out, okay, we know COVID hit. What happened? What's the factor? I mean, I guess it's many things. It's not one thing that we can point our finger at and say, COVID, we got people working from home. You would think that because people are working from home, businesses would save on that money from the real estate, right? And renting and want to save that and put it back into their people. But that is not what's happening. And, we see the family suffering. We see something new, which we talked about a little bit earlier before the show, which is instead of having maybe two interviews for a five-figure job, right? Not even a high-end five-figure job, you have to go through four. A friend of mine posted, he went through six interviews and was told no. And by the time you get to the second interview, you should be a strong candidate with that organization, corporation, whatever it is, so that, you're not wasting your time. I feel like these employers are wasting people's time, energy, and also it's not helping them pay their rent, right? Because they're waiting 4 months for all of these interviews. And in 4 months, you've defaulted on your car if you can't pay. You know what I mean? So, why is everything changing? It seems like all of a sudden. I can't blame it on COVID. What's your viewpoint on that?
Yeah. No, this is the increase in the number of interviews for hiring is kind of two things, right? One, on the negative side, it's a stalling tactic because the position has already been filled. They just have to go through the proper process and check the boxes that, yes, we put this out here. Yes, we interviewed other candidates. And then we selected this candidate who's the best one, right? So some of that is just, it's BS, unfortunately. On the other side, what we're also seeing is there's a lot of fraud going on for these hiring positions. And so one of the things that people are doing, which part of this kind of came out during COVID, was people were doing remote work and people were like working for three or four companies all at once, right? You saw this a lot in tech where it's like, I'm working from home. So from, I can manage my schedule from 6 to 10, I work for this company, from 10 to one, I work for this company, right? And so what people were doing is they'd have different people doing the interviews and then a different person would actually take the job, right? And so I would say, okay, you, Janice, you're applying for a tech position. You're like, okay, here's a tech position. And it's really mostly like, writing stuff like that, whatever, but I don't know the tech stuff. So then you hit me up and go, hey, can you do this interview for me? So then I do the interview over the phone and I, answer the questions, right? It's a bad example because we're different gender, but let's just assume, right? Yeah. But so I answer the questions. Right. You know what I mean? So I answer the questions. So I do the first round, do the second round, answer the question again. They're just like, okay, great, get started. But then get the job, but you show up and do the job, right? Mm-hmm. And so we started seeing, so that kind of started happening during COVID and people were doing different jobs. Now what we're seeing is even more so in that, it's that same thing where there's one person doing all the interviews and then somebody showing up differently to actually do the job and do the work. And so the reason for the more interviews is to draw that out to try and make sure, is this the actual person that I'm talking to and hiring? So that is a thing that is happening. That's happening at big companies. Companies have gotten fooled where somebody come in and they're working for 3, 4, 5 months and failing at it because they don't really know what they're doing because somebody else was actually doing the interviews for them. So that is a legitimate, on the positive side, of what they're trying to do is make sure that they're going that process. So, and then the third part of it, to your point, that there's a lot of things going on, is when you have massive layoffs like we've had and massive constriction of companies, you have a bunch of people entering the workforce at one time. Quite frankly, like some of these companies' hiring practices are very inefficient. These people are just overwhelmed. They're getting hundreds, if not thousands, of applicants for a job. And it's just, they don't know how to sift through it. They're not working through it. And now I'm going to tell you kind of like the secret that most of the time is really going on. And I can only speak in tech because this is where I've worked at. And I've been both on both sides of this, is that it's all network, right? It is more than likely 80% of the time, if a job is posted, that hiring manager already knows who they want to hire because it's somebody like in their network that they've worked with, or somebody in there that's earning the job, or somebody they worked with a couple of years ago they want to pull in. They already know who they want to hire for that job. The requisition is going up just so they can say they've checked the box and done it. It is a very networked industry, to where it's so much more about like who you know and who knows you that gets you in that door. Because the recruiters half the time don't really know the position. The hiring manager is so busy, they can't really get in on it. So they're just like, I need somebody to start today, to start a run out. I need somebody I trust. And so that's what they do. They go to their network, right? Before they go to the recruiter, they'll text in a group chat and be like, hey, I'm looking for this position. Do you know of anybody? And I can tell you these things are happening because as I've made it in my career, like that's what's happening. I'll get texts from people. Hey, David, I'm looking for this type of position. Do you know anybody? Right. And so what I've made sure I do is I expanded my network, one, to make sure that if I need a position, I've got people I can reach out to. But also I'm reaching out to other people around. It's like, OK, who's looking for things? Because as I hear these things, hey, are you looking for someone? No problem. Let me connect you. Here's this person's phone number. Here's this person's email. Talk to them directly, because if you go submit through that front door, you're one of 15,000. Right. And it'll probably never get there. But in fact, I'll get you directly to the hiring manager. So unfortunately, that is most of the time what is happening. And so what I would tell people that are out there in tech that are looking for jobs, and I'm probably at least 2 or 3 people a month that I'm talking to, because I tell anybody, if you connect with me on LinkedIn, I will help you any way I can. My network is your network. I don't care if I've never met you. I don't care if you're seeing this for me. You can follow me on LinkedIn and send me a DM. If my network is yours, if I can find a position for you, I will find somebody that's hiring. I will connect you to them, because I know how this works and I know what it's like to be on the outside trying to get through. And I know that this is just a culture of how they move, right? So part of that is what I would tell people is, I tell any young person that's entering in, I tell anybody that's any person that's trying to transition into tech, it is not your skills that is going to keep you in this industry. It is your ability to network. It is your ability to connect with people and understand who they are and keep up with them. That is something that I know for me, you know, my mom and a lot of the older people in my family told me, go to school, get a good job, get your head down, just work hard, don't make any trouble, right? That is so absolutely wrong for success in this generation of working. You get in there, you still want to work hard and do a good job, but you need your head up. You need to be talking to everybody. You need to, your VP, your peer, your manager, that person you don't like, that can't stand, you need to talk to them too, right? You need to know and make sure that all these people know you, because that network is going to keep you, right, top of mind when things like this happen. When all of a sudden somebody says, okay, I'm on a hiring freeze, but I can hire 1 or 2 more people, they're like, oh, let me reach out to David, because I remember I worked with him 2 years ago and he was a really cool person to work with. Okay, great. That's what's going to get you through. And if you're trying to break in, you don't have that network, what I would tell you is find the position that you're looking for, right? Go stalk that company on LinkedIn. Go figure out who the hiring manager is. Go talk to that hiring manager. Find other people that work there. Like, you have to network your way in to the tech career. It just submitting an application and waiting, it's your, at this point, it's like submitting a lottery ticket, unfortunately. Like, I'm not trying to, I don't want people to be discouraged, but I just want people to know the truth and what's there and the best ways to go about it.
Right. I wish we had a mass network for our community where we could recommend each other, you know, and stick together in that way, in some sort of way, because we need that. We need to know who to call. So now, you know, you can call David for tech.
I'm just playing. Listen, you can.
I don't want to try to bombard you. But like, I need a job. Hey, I remember this guy named David. But there are, you know, people that you may know that you can recommend. If you can do that, if you're an HR, you know, look out for people, because it is hard out here. It is hard out here. You know, it used to be a time not very long ago where they would call you in for an interview because you were Black, so they could check off that affirmative action box. Mm-hmm. Now, what would happen with that, because they might not even bother to call you in now. So before, you at least would get your foot in the door to prove yourself. Are we going to get that chance now? I have no idea what's going to happen with that. So let's talk about like some solutions. Like, what can we do? So we know we need to network. Is there anything else that we can do to help, you know, tilt the scales a little bit on our side so that we can get a job, because we have to feed our families? So you know what's going to happen, right? Crime is going to jump because people have to feed their baby. You see your baby looking at you hungry, you know, and you can't feed them because you've been out of work for 6 months. I remember when I was working, it took me a year and a half to find a job that I could afford. When I say I can afford, so I could pay my bills before I was doing all this. So, you know, my bank account still, you know, needed a certain amount of money. So, you know, what can we do? What can we do?
I don't have silver bullet answers, right? But I can tell you some of the things that I'll tell you things that I've done in my life, right, when I had to get through. Number one is, and I'm gonna preface this around the tech, because this is the area that I know, right? I can't tell you anything outside of that. I've never worked in that industry. So, but from a tech perspective, it's finding and learning new skills, right? It is so much easier now to pick up new skills between Khan Academy, YouTube. I'm trying to think, there's another one that I'm missing, a big one, courses that are free courses. Heck, MIT. Right, has like full computer science courses online, right? So number one is picking up on those skills and getting those skills. Number two, like if you're looking at it, and I understand like you have to find you know, positions that give you enough income to get in, right? Now is not the time to be prideful, and this is probably gonna hurt to hear, right? Start consolidating and reducing your costs to the most you can, right? So redefine what's a luxury, like, to your house. If there's, you know, if you have the ability to, you know, combine households, right? Cousins or families or parents or something like that, get that together, right? You're going to have to start looking at this differently and looking at a community model, right? One of the things I think sometimes that puts us into peril is that we try and do everything on our own, right? And I get that maybe sometimes your family isn't the best support system, you know, find friends, stuff like that, or whatever. You got to go to roommates. I had at one point, when it was really bad for me, I went to go live with my brother and my sister-in-law for 2 years, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't easy, right? I wasn't 25; I was in my 30s, right? Like, and there's just certain things that I had to give up, but I wanted to go and do a reset, right? Cut down, you know, the expenses that I had, and then, you know, work with them, right? So those are one things I would say: start doing. Take a hard look at where you are and see how much you can reduce. If you're somewhere around the tech or looking to get into tech, like, go and start to learn skills, figure out the positions. I would target things like, you know, positions that are like marketing, being able to do one big thing is like SEO, a search engine optimization is still a big thing. A lot of people don't understand how to do that for small businesses. And you can use this as, while you're doing that and learning these skills, do things like Fiverr or Upwork, where you can do contract work and work with like small little organizations, do little things. But what this is doing is giving you experience and helping you build up a portfolio. So when you find a job you want to apply for, it's not just, oh, I took these courses and get these skills. I did. And I also did this. This is what I delivered. This is what I did. When you submit for an application, like, don't just do an application, get back to the cover letter. And in the cover letter, like, show the hell off. Like, speak confidently about who you are and what you're going to deliver. Understand about the organization and say, you want to hire me because this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to increase this by X amount, right? But while you're doing that, find new skills that you can learn. work and work to get some contract positions on Fiverr. Like, I absolutely love Fiverr. People are always hiring on Fiverr. They're doing little things. And again, these aren't things, and I understand you're going to look at this and say, like, David, that's not going to feed my family. I understand that. These aren't things that are going to feed your family. What they're going to do is give you skills and experience so that you can keep going for these jobs to kind of get you there, right? Those are the best things I can tell you. There's things that I'm telling my mentees is to find and build up the skills and start doing some contract work. Small businesses right now, while you are hurting as a family, small businesses are hurting as well, but they still need these things, right? And so you can find ways where you can work with them, you know, 1 month at a time, 2 months at a time, little things there to get you some income going. But again, you're also building your skills and network. Talk to that business owner. Does he know other business owners? Or does she know other business owners, right? So I promise I wish I had silver bullets. I could tell you, do this and you will go and get a job. The fact of the matter is, it is hard. Network as best you can. I am dead serious when I say this. Like, you can look me up on LinkedIn. It's LinkedIn/IdentityJedi. Like, you will pop up, you will see my face. Like, if I can help you in any way in the tech side, I will connect you with who I can.
Fantastic. I'm so glad to hear that. That's fantastic. Now I need to let the listeners know too that we are a small business, so we hire from Fiverr a lot of times. So, you know, we'd love to be a big business, you know, like the bigger parenting magazines, but we're still growing. So we hire from Fiverr all the time. And I always try to find some people that know the culture. If you know the culture, I want to hire you, because I can't, if you don't know it, you can't really write about it. You can't do a lot of things, but I can't manage my social media because you don't know what you might say that might be off and might offend. So, you know, right. Sometimes we have to, you know, look for people from our culture. So it doesn't happen all the time, you know, it depends on your expertise, but we try to do that as much as we can, when, especially when it's necessary. So go there, Fiverr.com, Fiverr, two R's at the end. So what can we do to advocate for ourselves? What would you recommend? Because we're in a time where people are even afraid to speak up on social media about, you know, what's going on, because you get people throwing these weaponized words at you, or saying that, like, you know, we want a handout, like you mentioned earlier. So what can we do?
We respond with both facts and love, right? One of the persons I love to follow online is Jemele Hill. And I love Jemele Hill's responses, because she has this perfect blend of petty and factual both at the same time, right? But I can't do that because my petty just kicks all the way in and then it's just over, right? So I can't, I don't know how to do that. So, but we get these weaponized words thrown at us, like, respond in love, but in facts, right? And stay to where the facts are, because here's the thing, no matter how they may try, you cannot dilute the truth, right? And so that's where we stick to. I would say for the people that are listening, that are watching, that are in positions, right, do speak up and say things. For the people that are like, I'm afraid to say something, I don't know, it's strength in numbers. Connect with your peers, because if you're feeling that way, I guarantee you somebody across the way, it feels the exact same way, right? You are not alone. Don't try and do this alone, right? Reach out. We're better in groups. There's a lot of Black in tech groups that happen. So Black in Tech is one. Obsidian is another kind of social media platform where a lot of Black people are on. Like, reach out and start to connect with different people so you don't feel alone, but continue to get behind and support the people that are advocating that and that do have those platforms. I'll give you another example. There's a guy, his name, he goes by the Job Father. His name is Jermaine on LinkedIn, really big. He has started Jupiter HR. He's on a mission to put 500 people in tech. And I think this is his last number, he was like four something. Has an HR recruiting service that helps people, Black people, get into tech. But he's a big advocate. He does a lot of stuff on LinkedIn. So if you're looking at this and say, I want to fight back, I'm afraid, like, find the influencers that are doing it, support them. And just remember, you're not in this alone, right? So reach out, make sure that you're connecting with your other peers, stay connected with them. And I know it's going to get tired. I know you're going to be tired, but just, we got to fight, right? When you can't fight, then call somebody else so they can fight for you.
Right. And tech is the future. You guys know that. It's the edge. It's everything. So if you're not there, you're going to get left behind. And I feel kind of bad for, like, older people who are resisting change, because this is where we're going. Like, it's already here. It's just going to, proliferate, and you're going to need to know basic stuff like even cold, you know? So, you know, we have, you know, a lot that we still have to work toward. You know, say freedom is not free, right? So mm-hmm. we're working, we're gonna keep fighting, we're gonna do what we gotta do. Absolutely. So let me ask you, but we're running out of time, but is there anything else that you want to tell the audience that's listening that you think is important?
Not that I haven't already covered. Just know that again, I'll say it again, that you are not alone. There's people out here that are fighting this fight, that are speaking up, you know, every single day. We hear you, we know you're struggling. And don't lose faith in each other, right? You can lose faith in everybody else, but we just can't lose faith in one another.
Right. I think that's great advice, and I appreciate you. I loved everything you said, and I'm glad you came on the show today, because this is so important, and I can't wait till everyone hears what you have to say, because so many people are suffering right now. So I want to thank you for sharing all that information, and if you have anything else in the future, you know, please come back on the show and share it with us.
Absolutely will. Thanks so much for having me.
No, thank you. All right, guys. So I want to thank all of you for participating and listening to Back Talk by Successful Parenting Media and Successful Black Parenting Magazine, the syndicated podcast and live stream talk show for parents. Don't forget to follow us by going to our website at successfulblackparenting.com. It's full of great content to help you to thrive and not just survive as a parent. Make sure you share. Until next time, I wish you all the best and much success. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to Back Talk by Successful Black Parenting Magazine. We'll see you soon.